Well, good morning, 10 o'clock. It's good to be with you. My name's Keith. If you haven't met me before, I'm one of the ministers here. And it's great to open the word with you this morning. I've been noticing as I watch the TV and look at the newspapers and listen to the radio that there is a word that will sell you just about anything. I've noticed with all sorts of things, with sneakers, with coffee, with watches, cars, parts for cars, DVDs, DVD players, artwork, software. I even noticed it as Beck and I were looking through those entertainment books, you know, with the discount vouchers in. We were looking at the restaurants that we might go and visit. And one of them said this: go to this restaurant and you will have the authentic Italian experience. And I thought to myself, how is that possible? Don't you have to be in Italy to have the authentic Italian experience? But there it is. Authentic is used to sell just about everything these days, and the marketers are onto something, I think. They know that people are after authenticity. We crave it. In an age where videos can be doctored, pictures can be airbrushed, words can be spun to mean just about anything, people want to know that stuff is real. And one place you see our desire for authenticity, almost above all, is with people. We expect, we want people to be the real deal. We expect people to be who they say they are. Just last week in the news, we saw a spectacular example of somebody failing to do that. The New South Wales Labor politician David Campbell, you might have seen this story. He revealed that he'd been living a secret life for over 20 years as a gay man, unbeknownst to his wife or any of his colleagues. And when that fact was made public, he resigned immediately because he knew that his behaviour didn't match up to the image that he had projected to his electorate, that of being a family man with family values. And for days afterwards, talkback radio was full of the word that we use when somebody's behaviour doesn't match up to their beliefs. We call that person a hypocrite. And if there's one group of people that get that tag attached to them more than others, it's Christians, just like we saw from the two guys here at the driving range. Now, we're in a series of talks at the moment called Why We Don't Believe, and we're looking at common reasons why people don't want to associate themselves with Christianity or even explore Jesus at any sort of depth. And today, we're looking at this issue, the issue of hypocrisy. And some people express it a bit like this: look, I'm okay with Jesus. I just can't stand his followers. I mean, aren't they all hypocrites? Now, why is this an issue? Why does that tag get attached to Christians so often? Well, I think there's three reasons at least. Firstly, Christians in public. It's no secret that lots of people who wear the name Christian publicly fail in all sorts of ways in the public eye. Our Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, professes to be a Christian. And yet we see him say that there is an issue for which is the greatest moral issue of our time and which he is prepared to die in a ditch for, and then, for the sake of politics, says, well, actually, we could put that great moral issue off for a couple of years. And people's confidence is lowered. Or we have the leader of the opposition, Mr. Abbott, who professes also to be a practicing Catholic and says, well, actually, when I speak, there's kind of two kinds of truth. There's one that you should really believe and one that you shouldn't necessarily believe or hold me to account for. And so confidence drops a little bit more. But then there are, of course, the more tragic, more devastating examples of Christians failing in public, like the article that was splashed across the Herald just a couple of weeks ago, of a priest, a Catholic priest in Queensland, who had been discovered to be abusing children and was facing five counts of child abuse. People entrusted to his care, and he had failed them
big time. Now, every time people see someone like this who claims to be a Christian and the devastation that is caused in their wake, they think, well, look, I know people who behave far better than that, who've got nothing to do with Christianity. So why would I bother looking at all that stuff? Christians in public cause that tag to be labelled with all Christians. The second reason is Christians up close. And maybe some of you have experienced the sort of thing that I experienced with my mate Matt. It's not his real name to protect him. But in my late teens, when I was dating Beck and things were starting to get serious, there was a couple at our church who kind of took us under their wing and had us over for meals and talked to us about what Christian marriage was all about. And we enjoyed their company and they shared their wisdom with us. And a few years later, it came out that all of that time, Matt had been having an affair with somebody at his work. And when it came out, he left his wife, left the city, left Christianity, and left us completely devastating. And maybe you've had that experience of a Christian up close who's failed to live up to what they've said. And it leaves you thinking, aren't all Christians like that? But the third reason I think this tag gets attached to Christians is something I call Simpson's Christianity. From good old Ned Flanders. See, the popular presentation of Christianity in the media is that it's just a moral code that you live by. A bunch of rules. And so people perceive Christians to be those people who say, look, I'm going to try and live by that set of rules. And that's okay if that's as far as it goes. But then Christians go on and say weird things like, look, I know that I'm right with God. Or I know that I am definitely going to heaven when I die. And that's where it grates. I mean, who are they to declare themselves to be right with God? Who are they to say that they can look into God's big book of brownie points and give themselves a gold star? It's just like they've given themselves a big tick from God for the way that they live their lives. Like Christianity is the path to righteousness and superiority, and they've hitched a ride down that path riding on their own massive egos. And if that's what your impression of Christianity and Christians has been, I can understand that. But I'm really glad that you're here today, because I've got the opportunity now of opening up the Bible and showing you what it actually says. So what does it say to this topic, to this issue? A few things to point out. Firstly, Jesus hated hypocrisy. Not just mere annoyance like swatting at a fly, not just a mild dislike, like accidentally eating the pickle in the cheeseburger. Jesus hated hypocrisy. And some of the strongest language we see from Jesus' lips is served up to the religious leaders of the day. We heard it in the Bible reading. Jesus loads up both barrels and says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." Oh, Jesus hated hypocrisy. And so it made sense, secondly, that he didn't want his followers to be hypocrites. So in the famous Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says this: "When you pray, don't be like the hypocrites. For they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on street corners to be seen by men. I tell you, they've received their reward in full." Jesus hated hypocrisy. He didn't want his followers to be hypocrites, which makes the next point seem a little bit bizarre. Because you see, thirdly, Jesus chose spectacular hypocrites to be his followers. You see it with the closest circle of Jesus' followers. James and John, brothers, following the teacher who was teaching them to have servant hearts. Yet there they are, plotting and scheming, saying, "Look, Jesus, we know, right? We know that there's a day when you're going to come into kind of power. How about James has the left seat and I have the right seat? How do you reckon that'd go?" Or Judas, we all know about Judas, claimed that he loved Jesus, that he was one of his closest followers, and yet betrayed him to his enemies to be crucified for a mere 30 pieces of silver. Or take Peter, the future leader of the church in Jerusalem. Jesus said to all of the 12, "Look, guys, the day's going to come when I'm going to fall, and all of you guys, you're going to leave. You're going to leave me. You're going to get scattered and go place to place." And Peter says, "No way." Jesus says, "I tell you the truth. Today, even tonight, even before the rooster crows twice, you, Peter, you'll disown me three times." And Peter says, "Even if I have to die, I will never disown you." And yet a few hours later, there they come, the series of people. "Surely you're with that Nazarene." "No way, no way, no way," says Peter. The rooster crowed twice. And he broke down and wept. Jesus hated hypocrisy. He didn't want his followers to be hypocrites. And yet he chose people whom he knew to be hypocrites to be his followers. What's with that? Well, to see what's going on and why it matters for you, we have to see one more piece of the puzzle. You see, fourthly, Jesus himself was never a hypocrite, ever. Jesus said things like, "I have come to seek and save the lost." And so that's where you found him, hanging out with the rejected, with the despised tax collectors, the prostitutes, the unclean, the social outcasts. Jesus said, "With my coming to the earth, a light has dawned on those living in the shadow of darkness." And so he spent days and days healing those who came to him in need. Jesus said, "Love your enemies." And so as he hung dying on the cross, he looked down at those who had hung him up there and said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." The Bible is clear that Jesus always walked the talk. He performed the promise. Hebrews 4:14 tells us that Jesus was tempted in every single way that you and I are, but yet was without sin. In other words, he was the one true, authentic human being. His beliefs and his actions were always in perfect alignment. His trust in his heavenly Father was always expressed perfectly in the way that he treated others, in his speech, in his actions. He was the one and only real deal. No wonder he hated hypocrisy. No wonder he called his people not to be hypocrites. But why then would he call a James and John? Why then would he call someone like Peter, the great denier? Why then would he call someone like me? You see, I'm a hypocrite. I don't always walk the talk in all sorts of ways. I'll give you just one of many. I made a promise when I got married that I would love my wife sacrificially. But I don't always do that. There are days when I wake up and I'm just cranky and I'm just full of myself. And guess what? Today's about me. And I want everyone in the house to know that today's about me. So I let my wife know it's all about me. I let my kids know, hey, guess what? Today's all about me. If I had a cat, I'd probably kick that as well. I'm not loving her sacrificially at that point. I'm not walking the talk. But you know, the news that Jesus was the true one authentic human being, it doesn't terrify me. And it doesn't demotivate me thinking, look, how on earth could I ever live up to that standard? How could I keep all the rules just like that? Knowing Jesus was the one authentic human being fills me with great and profound joy. And it's because of this last point. The authentic human Jesus came to die, to save and change the hypocrites. This is the heart of Christianity. Jesus came to die to save us and to change us. 2 Corinthians 5:21 puts it like this: God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. And this is a world away from Simpson's Christianity. Simpson's Christianity says, look, try really hard. And if you've done a good job, then give yourself a gold star on God's behalf. But true Christianity says, look, you'll never be good enough, no matter how hard you try. But Jesus was good enough in your place for you. So where does that leave all the hypocrites? All those people who have interfered with children, all those people who have done all that damage. Does that mean that what they did doesn't matter? Oh, it matters. Jesus hates sin. He makes it clear that he hates hypocrisy. And God's righteous anger must fall on hypocrisy, just like with any other sin. But for those who turn to Jesus and are truly sorry for what they have done, who truly despair of their own ability to live the authentic life before God, for those people, there is forgiveness. Because the judgment for their sin, for their hypocrisy, has already fallen. It's fallen on Jesus in their place. But you might say, that's outrageous. Those people are hypocrites. Doesn't God know what they've done? Well, let me ask you a question for a moment. Have a think in your own mind. What are your own core values? What are your own principles that you try and live life by? Maybe it's be truthful to others. Maybe it's give others a fair go. Whatever they are, what are they? Now, let's just say that I worked out a way to put a recording device on you for a month. Capture all your words, capture all your actions. And at the end of the month, I sit down with your list, your own personal list of core values. And all the things that you said and all the things that you did in every situation. Would they match up every time? Every time? Because if they don't match up just once, guess what? You're a hypocrite. Just like me. Just like everyone else in the room here. Just like everyone else in the suburb and in the city and in the country. You're just like me. You know, the good news today, what day is it? there is a path to authenticity. True Christianity is all about authenticity. It's admitting who you really are before God and that your behavior doesn't even match up to your own standards, let alone God's. And it's about receiving forgiveness at Christ's high cost. And it's about being changed day by day by the Spirit of God to become more authentic, to become just like Jesus, the one true authentic human being. So let me ask you this morning, what's it going to be? A life pointing at all the other hypocrites? Which is in itself an incredible act of hypocrisy. Or a life of authenticity. Admitting failure, seeking forgiveness, and help to change. And there's different sorts of people who are gathered here this morning, I guess. There's some people here who have understood a while ago that they're not the real deal on their own strength, and they have turned to Jesus and accepted his death in their place. And now they live day by day being changed by his Spirit to become more authentic, always repenting, always receiving forgiveness and moving on. There may be some people here this morning, maybe you're here this morning and you've come because of this series that we're in. That you're checking out. Look, does Christianity actually have any merit? Does it have any intellectual weight behind it? Is any of it worth listening to? And you're here checking us out and you don't want to make any other steps. You're just kicking the tires at the moment. And if that's you, then it's great to have you here. If you want to talk about any of these things further, come and see me, come and see John, come and talk to Eric, or any of us. If you came with someone, ask them about this stuff. It's great that you're here. Maybe this morning, though, there is someone here or a few people here who are ready to change, who are ready to say, look, I want to be authentic, and on my own, I know that I can't be. And for those people, I want to give the chance to take up Jesus' offer of forgiveness and his promise of change. And we're going to do it through praying a prayer. And if this is you, then you pray the prayer after me in your own mind. This is how the prayer is going to go. It says this: Dear God, I'm sorry that I have not lived the authentic life that you made me for. Thank you that Jesus was authentic and died in my place for my sins. Please forgive me and help me by your Spirit to be more authentic day by day. Simple prayer. But if you pray that for the first time and you mean it, then you've changed. You're no longer a hypocrite in the sense of all those accusations on Christianity. So I'm going to pray this prayer line by line now. And if this is for you, then echo it in your mind. I'll ask us all as an act of courtesy for those around us, if we could all bow our heads and close our eyes as I pray this. Dear God, I'm sorry that I've not lived the authentic life you made me for. Thank you that Jesus was authentic and died in my place for my sins. Please forgive me and help me by your Spirit to be more authentic day by day. Amen. In the seats in front of you, you'll see a welcome card. And if you took the opportunity to pray that prayer today, then let us know. We'd love to come talk to you. You can come and talk to us down at the Red Lounges. If that's not for you, then just take a moment to fill in the card. You can just tick the box that said, "Today I said yes to Jesus," because we'd love to know how to help you to take the next step. If you want to check it out further, the sort of stuff that I'm saying, or if you've got any questions, you can write those down on the card now, and you can put those into the offertory bags as they come around.